You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Angry music calls for serious people. Sometimes angry, not always, though. Joining me from, I believe, New York, the state of New York, at an undisclosed location, Will Costantini. Will, how are you?
I'm good. I'm in an undisclosed location because I may be in violation of state orders regarding quarantine people coming from the Midwest into the great state of New York.
Into the empire.
I wouldn't want to admit to any.
Oh, if you were hypothetically within the state, what's their rule? How long do you have to quarantine?
14 days. Because you know how dangerous it is out there in the Midwest compared to New York. So,
nice. Joining me from McAllen, Texas, Tim Lynch. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing great today, Mac. How about you?
I'm a little hot. 96 this afternoon.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, that's McAllen weather there.
I know. Like, who needs that shit? yeah, Southern California near the coast. Like, what? Like, anyway, whatever. And joining me in the 96-degree weather is the one and only Jeff Kenny from Connecticut. He's a nutmegger, don't you know? Jeff?
I am. I'm wearing my Speedo. It's so hot here.
There you go. I have to tell you, boys, I had a little bit of a meltdown yesterday on the air. Not in my lifetime do I recall... my affiliation with the Marine Corps dates back to 1983. Do I recall, and it may have happened, I just might have missed it, but do I recall a mid-air collision between any kind of aircraft and a refueling aircraft that brought the refueler down? Damaged baskets, I got it. Broken hoses, I got it. All that stuff, but never. And now in the space of 22 months, but for the grace of God, yesterday we lose another KC-130J and the entire crew. An F-35, a $100 million fighter aircraft, gets pancaked into the desert near Palm Springs. And so is this like, or there's an explanation for everyone, or do when you look at them and you begin to string ships colliding, ships burning in port, special operations community that cannot seem to ethically find its way. Is it me overreacting to something, or when you loop this all together, have we lost the bubble in terms of what our military is supposed to do? We're so confident, we went over there and had our way with the counterinsurgents that we fought, right? Which is why it's taken us 20 years to fight them to a draw. Am I overreacting to this? And I take this back to something Will brought to everybody's attention, which was a letter from the SecNav after his first 100 days. And nowhere in the letter does he mention operational excellence. So, Will, what say ye to all that?
You know, I think every incident has got its own details. And I don't think that anyone throughout the force is trying to screw up. But at the strategic level, you know, if you're the SecNav in particular, if you're the service chiefs, if you're short on the board of directors at the three-star level and above, you should be concerned. And you have to really look hard inside yourself and say, is there something, or is there a bright red light that's flashing out there? And what could that bright light be? Are we focused on the right things? Do we measure the right things? Are we accountable to the right things? Or you can just say, well, there's just a bunch of one-offs and everyone's good. And we're going to do great. And you're all smart. And, you know, it's all well and good.
Like your basic TBS critique of any event.
I don't recall a lot of TBS critiques that were, you know, everyone's good, you're good, we're all happy, et cetera. And, you know, the formative years of my life in the Marine Corps was with a guy named Dave Bice, who was an excruciating, detailed, accountable, unpleasant person, battalion commander. He saved my ass a lot of times through my later years in life. So I share your – I don't know if I've had a meltdown about it, but I share your concern because I don't know that anyone is sharing their concern. You know, when the SecNav goes out and says we're all great, I don't think that's the guy that's worried about fixing a systemic issue of, incompetence in a lot of ways. Who in the force is grabbing someone and making sure that he's got their undivided attention on, you know, General Mattis used to say, brilliance in the basics.
Right.
I don't know.
Timmy, thoughts?
I don't think operational excellence is a term that's even in vogue now. Much as General Allen told us back in the Naval Academy days when he was teaching there, they banned leadership because they thought it was discriminatory, which is interesting because that seems to be where all the upper level attention is. The plane accident yesterday could very well be a one-off because it's a new plane. It's, you know, new planes tend to have a higher incident rate, but maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But there's enough indicators out there that we have some fundamental problems about what it is exactly we're doing. And when you listen to the leadership, to include the commandant, when you played earlier in the weekend, an hour with him, what are they talking about? Women in ships, women in the infantry, increasing minorities. But I think operational excellence is now considered something that is not necessarily something we need, because everybody seems to be proceeding along the lines that if we get involved in another shooting war, it's going to be like Iraq or Afghanistan, where we can turn up the pressure, turn down the pressure, turn up, you know, we can modulate our casualties and string it out for a while and not have to seriously fight an enemy who could kick our ass. And I don't think that our leadership believes there's anything like that out there, because this song and dance we're doing with the primary threat of China, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of it. I don't understand it. And I just think that right now, operational excellence is considered to be irrelevant because everybody thinks that we are still the hegemon, that we are still the best and the biggest in the world, which we are for sure. But I don't know how much longer that can be, and I don't believe that you can conduct yourself as if we'll never be in a close run thing again. I don't know how that could happen, but it could happen. And I don't think that until it does happen to us, will we take like being warfighters seriously. There's no Al Grays waiting off in the wings that I know of. And I don't see any kind of a turnaround or emphasis on the basics unless I'm very, very doubtful that the right person could make it to the top right now. Because I don't think the right person is going to be politically acceptable.
To your point, Gray would not have got to the top were it not for another anomaly, and that was the Secretary of the State, Jim Webb, Secretary of the Navy, Jim Webb. If it wasn't for Webb,
absolutely true.
Right? Marine Corps would have never have experienced General Gray, and so maybe that's just the way it is. When we hire the high functioning conformists, you get them to hire other high functioning conformists, and you don't do what General Gray did, which is stray outside the lines. Let me ask, so Jeff, your thoughts, operational excellence.
The ethos is decaying.
We used to have an ethos. I mean, it predated General Gray. And what it was you must succeed. You must succeed. You must not display poor leadership. You must have your hair within regs. You must be on time. You must not fail. If you fail, you are useless to us. You're useless to yourself. You're a dishonor. And every guy's got that in that little coal burning in the back of his head, saying, "I must do what I'm supposed to do. I must check everything that you know I'm assigned to." And I'm not just talking infantry stuff. Obviously, it goes double. I think in a lot of ways when you're talking aviation and the things that have to be done to keep those birds flying safely.
Because can I interject something? I saw this and it absolutely corroborates what you're saying. I don't know where I saw this yesterday. I saw it on somebody's maybe Twitter feed, and I don't know how I even saw it, but it said, "The Marine Corps made me afraid, not of death, of failure."
Yes, Thoth, fear of failure.
Right.
That's what makes you. I mean, look at us. Look at us. Where do we go and drink every day? We got finished sweating through land nav and all that bullshit we did in TBS. We went to the Hawk, and that guy personified, infuriated singleness of purpose. The idea that no matter what it was, you were going to attack it like it meant everything. You must not fail. You must not fail. You must not let your people fail. And what that translates to in a mundane sense is every day you check stuff. Every day you shave every day. You know, you check to make sure you got oil in your car and gas. You check everything. You don't ever do this inshallah bullshit, which has crept into our ethos, you know, since we got involved in the war on terror. And I'm not blaming the war on terror. You know, I'm just saying that it's happened. I remember when I went for my last uniform tour in Afghanistan, I heard a general officer say, "There's nothing here worth a Marine's life." And sure shit, 2 months later, we're in a gunfight, and I hear this kid yell, this fucking corporal, "There's nothing here in Afghanistan worth dying for." I mean, it's so, you know, cheesy. You know, it makes you embarrassed to be there, even though this is a real situation. We weren't in a movie. I mean, it wasn't that dangerous either, just rounds coming in. And he said that. He heard that from somebody above him. I mean, he didn't hear it from the general, but he heard it from somebody between him and the general. And that's what I mean when I say the ethos is gone. No matter what you're doing, whether we're attacking Helmand Province or we're attacking Ontario, Canada, our attitude should be, we must not fail. And if you got to be somewhere, you be there on time. If you got to make sure that something is going to work, you make sure you check. You know, you go and when you're the officer of the day, you check everything you're supposed to check every time you're supposed to. And I think especially in the Navy that is important. That you know that mind-numbing checklist stuff they got to do, because if they don't and a couple things line up, even if things are perfect, somebody could get killed in that stuff in the Navy. And I'm you know, later on we're going to talk about what we're reading now, but I'm pushing into deeper into Neptune's Inferno there in Guadalcanal. And it's like again and again, you know, the ethos of you must not fail. You must do everything right, and even then, like James Webb said in Fields of Fire, you can do everything right and still pay the price because someone else might not do everything right. And that is the brotherhood of it is. We're all always trying to do the right thing, whether it's something big or something, you know, pissy, you do it, you know, because otherwise someone else may pay the price.
I have this to say about that. I would, you know, going back to what Timmy said, you know, people think that we are the premier, you know, military on the planet. Well, I would say that in terms of infrastructure, in terms of, you know, our bases and where we are around the world and how mature that infrastructure is, we're absolutely peerless. In terms of logistics, absolutely peerless. Operationally, I question in terms of operationally, is our Navy the best? I don't know. I mean, everything I see tells me no, they're not. Right? We have ships, we have technology. You know, can we crew those ships? And can we, you know, are we, you know, head and shoulders? Well, we have carriers, but operationally, are we the best? I don't know. And the same thing, I would say the same thing relative to the ground component. Are we the best? Are we the toughest? Are we the hardest? Are we the best? And I would say, I mean, the Marine Corps, I still, to this day, it's hanging in my hall. I have a watercolor painting of the first time I ever failed in the Marine Corps. And it was at OCS. It was a double running of the O course, and I couldn't get up the rope the second time. Right? And because I didn't know how to climb the rope. I was climbing the rope with, like dummies do, with their arms, right? And I'm like 3 feet from the top the second time, and I can't fucking get there. And Staff Sergeant Timberlake, he used that occasion to annihilate me in public. And I felt like a failure. I felt like an absolute failure. And so, I mean, ultimately, I found out that you climb the rope with your feet, you stupid ass, right? And I scurried up for the next time. But I was forever scarred by that, because just like when you're fucking up in drill and they pull you out of the formation and they say, stand here, pull your cover down over your head, right? And unblouse your boots and stand here, right? By yourself. Well, right? You don't know that that's code to everybody else, that this guy's an idiot and fuck with them, right? So now everybody marches away and you're standing there looking like a soup sandwich. And people are going by, and they look like, who are you? Sir, Captain McNamara. What are you doing here by yourself? And they're just like, right? You don't know that that's a time-honored thing that they do. And what is the only thing you want? I just want to get back into that green pile of shit, right, and be like everybody. And so that fear is stoked from day one. And I think, I mean, that's an important cultural piece of, you know, being afraid to fail. Right. And then when you go to war, it's like, look, I don't know if I'm going to go home or not, but I do know this. I'm not going to fail anybody that depends on me. Right. That's the only thing I can really control over here. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my job the way I'm supposed to do it. And I'm not going to, you know, live with that. But again, what I see and I think Will, it's and I when I say TBS critique, what I mean is, so we're standing there doing critiques or AARs, whatever you want to call them, and you go around and the lieutenant's like, okay, tell me what you saw. Oh, well, you know, I think that so-and-so is navigating for the first time and blah, 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 and I think, you know, the next time, right? And then it gets to you and you're like, all right, stop the shit, man. We were supposed to LD at what time? 1500. What time did we LD? 1505. Why? Right? Who's the point? Where are you? Why weren't you cammied up? Sir. And so then we have the bloodletting, right? And that's how we grow up, and that's how we make progress. And so, I mean, to me, that's the critique, the version of it, like they think, like, oh, if we just try harder next time and work together, it'll all get better. To me, the shit that you see now are stuff, things that I don't recall seeing. Right, as a younger person, and has our lack of discipline, have these other priorities, and again, you know, if there's systemic racial issues, every one of us would say, show me and I'll crush it. Okay, if there's things that are being done that are unfair, show us and we'll put a fucking end to it. But God damn it, there's got to be accountability for operational excellence. And if there's not, again, the only reason we're not talking about what, 8 more people dead, is but for the grace of God. Guy ejects and survives the ejection, and somehow or other, you know, that plane collided with the KC-130, and those guys don't get out. Right? I mean, if they get out, it's a miracle, and somehow that guy got that thing on the deck, and everybody survives, and so. I don't know. The more you string this together and you see these things that are outside the bell curve, I don't know. It just seems to me that,
remember the old days, Mac, if they hit the pier, they were done. The ship's captain, no matter how big the ship was, he hit the pier, he was done. Even, and of course, he's not the one driving the ship. You know, he's the fucking captain. But if he hit the pier, it wasn't, you know, the helmsman or whatever, it was him. And in a lot of ways, oh, that's not really, you know, it's too arbitrary and blah, blah. But it made people fucking pay attention to what they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
I would say, too, that when I look at, or when I try and understand what the new force design and implementation is, we've got to be a lot better than we ever were pull this off. I mean, we're talking very small units, disaggregated, high risk, much more commando type style. And to do that, you've got to be much more ruthless in your own training and evaluation. There has to be an absolute standard that is tied in training to performance in the operational environment. And that standard doesn't care color, creed, nationality, declared sexual identity, et cetera. And, and we have got to be much, much better than we are. I mean,
let me ask you, Will, can the Marine Corps stay in its current configuration in terms of age, demographics, or does the Marine Corps have to get older? Because we are, what, 60% under the age of 26? We turn over.
Yeah, there's no way. You can't turn over 35,000 Marines every year on a base of 180 and do it. And part of our problem, too, is that you can't promote with the speed that it requires to be economically, you know, okay for people. The Air Force and the Navy are going to slow theirs down. And so you've got to have, no kidding, experienced second tour sergeant squad leaders who in their 8 years of service have basically done this to be excellent. You know, the Royal Marines is a great example for us in this, but they're tiny. They're 6,000.
They're so tiny, they're almost irrelevant.
But they are very, very well trained, and they're cohesive.
Yeah.
And they have standards that are absolutely unbent. I mean, they kicked the freaking prince out of the Royal Marines 20 years ago, where he resigned because he knew he couldn't make the standard.
Yeah.
Did you just say frickin' on this show?
I did.
That's a first, as far as everybody. Let me try. So what Will meant to say, I won't say it, but okay, I just
clicked. No, he was speaking in British.
Yeah.
So the Marine Corps, as it gets smaller, you think has to get older to achieve this level of
the depth of our, you know, our focus has got to be on that operational training, not on B billets, et cetera.
Got it.
And, you know, so you've got senior leadership saying we're going in this direction, and you got, you know, all the pointy heads coming out with the papers that support it. But the force design internal, I'm talking the career path, the who we recruit, the standards that we're held to are not going to keep up with that. And so we're likely to be in a worse place. What happens in 10 years if we actually employ this way, but we employ the force that we've organized, trained, and equipped in a, you know, that we've done for the last 50 years? That's when you get to Task Force Smith level failure.
Yeah, it can't work.
And the Marine Corps doesn't survive that.
It can't work. Timmy, additional thoughts on this?
So we're saying that they're right then in this new force design. Because I think those savage 19-year-olds we got, they're not as dumb as people think. I mean, they need to figure out a way to employ their young people in accordance with their capabilities and their you know, and how we can get them. I don't know what kind of recruiting model they're looking to think they're going to get all these people, you know, without paying them a shitload of money and stuff. Are we going to do that? So I think they need to look at the traditional type of person who comes in the Marine Corps when they come in and make hay out of that. We've been doing that for a long time, and it's been pretty goddamn successful.
Yeah, Jeff, I don't disagree with you, but
I know you don't.
The design and employment is not that right now.
Right, you're right. It's cut. This is you need to look at your people that you're going to have. That's what the unprofessionalism of this whole thing is what bothers me the most, because you always, you know, you end up being in a combat situation and you got these people and you got to make hay with them, whether they're perfect or not. It's too late to send them back. It's too late to get better ones. It's too late to get more. You got to do it with what you got. And
yeah, but the point is you know? with this new construct of the commandants and being smaller, does that mean we got to get older to be more professional, to be more savvy, to fight this different nuanced style of fighting? Because you're not going to be able to get there with first term guys and, you know, first, junior, second term guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. We got to do that, but just my instinct, you know, mitigates against it because I'm thinking this is I don't think it's realistic to go that way.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I got a lot of background in recruiting, and it's just not going to happen in the numbers we need. You know, unless we fucking amp up the salaries and shit. You know.
Right. Timmy, thoughts?
The only thought I have is the only historical example I can think of a military organization training detachments to basically operate independently behind the lines in a disaggregated way would be the Sellers Scouts. And we can't do Sellers Scout type training. For one thing, I think they lost a lot of people in their selection process, but they were facing an existential threat. And right. And so when you're facing an existential threat, you start coming up with some new ideas that worked. I mean, the Sellers Scouts were great at creating terror and taking out a lot of units with just a few handful of guys. I mean, it's a hell of a story to read, but I don't think we can do that. And I'm completely confused as to how this could play out in a war game or how they introduced. I'm confused by the whole thing, and I understand from listening to your show, Mac, that it's because the commandant hasn't communicated correctly on this, and he's going to fix that. But I'm just confused because I'm like Jeff just said, our young Marines, our little 18, 19 year olds, those little killers, they'll do what they have to do. And I too have a little bit of a background in recruiting, and that's a battle there, brother. Recruiting. I don't see how you're going to be able to attract and maintain an older force because you're competing with the special forces.
Okay, so how would it work? How would it work financially, Will, if we say, okay, we're going to become more mature? Your automatic rifleman is going to be a corporal. We're going to get older. We're gonna. Is it just a more expensive? So we're going to actually have to recruit less annually because we're going to retain more because we're going to pay more and bonus more. Does that work? How do we do that?
Well, are you going to have 6-year corporals? You know?
You design it for me. Do I need 6-year corporals? Do I need?
Well, that's the problem is that the promotion points keep moving farther to the right. And so a good, solid 03-11 sergeant is right on track when he's getting promoted to staff sergeant to be a platoon sergeant at the 13 or 14 year mark. You know, how do you do that? You can't do it.
Right. So everything's got to go left.
Everything's got to be, I mean, we're aligned now. But, you know, if you said you had one of your, you have a guy that's right in the groove, solid performer, 13-year sergeant, we kick him out of the Marine Corps.
Yeah, right.
You know, we do. But that's what it's going to take to be a smaller, disaggregated, higher risk force. Either that or automatic riflemen are going to be sergeants, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Sergeants are going to be gunnies. Platoon commanders are going to be captains.
Right.
Yeah. It's this operational design of, you know, the South China Sea does not fit with the organized, train, and equip. And I don't know how you square that circle. We've got a model in MARSOC. I have no idea what their attrition rate is in their indocs. But, you know, those are the kind of people that we're going to need. But I don't even know how big MARSOC is now. Is it 3 or 4,000? And it takes the whole Marine Corps to do that.
It's interesting in this fight, right, in this peer-to-peer fight, where our special operations units that have been so active against insurgencies, where do we stick them? Where do they go? Where are all the soft guys? Where are they zooming around against the pier?
Where they should go, I think.
Where should they go?
Well, they should go to those places that that are austere. You're gonna have where people got to work on their own. They have to. That was the original idea with these guys, is that it would be a cost, you know, benefit, because they didn't need constant babysitting in regards to logistics. They'd get by on their own, and they were self-sufficient. They all were experts and stuff, 12 of them. You know, that was the original idea. And then later on, when we did advisory teams, we kind of went with that ethos, you know, with the thing. And I think that works pretty well. But that's not going to be enough. You know, that's not going to be enough.
Against the pier, the whole, you know, when people think special ops, like, you know, swinging via a fast rope, you know,
yeah,
lighting off your whatever weapon, and then doing all this crazy, that's gone. Yeah. That's gone.
That's such a perversion of what the original idea was.
Right.
Any guy can be, I mean, you could teach guys to do mountaineering, you teach them to do cliff assaults, you could teach them to do fast roping, you teach them to take down, you teach them hostage rescue. But that's not what special ops was originally. What it was a few guys you sent in to influence a bunch of people in a different culture. That was the idea. And the idea would be that we could get those cultures working for the for the American way and not the communist way. That was the original idea. It was a good idea. You know, it wasn't easy, though. And ultimately, the type of guy you had who wanted to do that type of thing, independent guy, self-motivated and stuff like that, that's the type of guy who ended up in Delta Force. That's the type of guy who ended up trying to rescue POWs in Santoy in 1970. That's the type of guy, you basically took him and you used him for what any motivated infantry person could do with enough training, because the training you gave him was execution of tasks, not coming up with his own solutions, you know, in regards to people and situation. He may have to manage a defense on his own, may have to manage an attack on his own. The type of people they got in these tier one units now, they're just door kickers, man. They kill people, but they don't fight, you know, and that's a waste of that. You know, there's a lot of things that have been perverted in our service since the beginning of the war on terror, and that's one of the main ones. We're not using these guys' brains. That's the biggest thing about these guys, is the good brains they have. And what are they doing? You know, they're putting two in the chest, one in the head, and, you know, supposedly rescuing people and shit. But, you know, there's a lot more to these guys.
Right. No, it's just, I mean, I was reading something the other day that says they're in search of a mission. Right. I mean,
right.
And it's like they're going to go, the mighty Mississippi that is the special operations community goes back inside of its banks. And it's like an identity crisis. Like, what do you mean? Like, yeah, well, guess what? You know, our main formations, our ships, you know, and those are all greater players in this conflict than you are. You guys were something else. The whole idea of operational excellence, it just seems to me that we don't read about it enough, and we don't hear people saying, look, I want to say something. I am absolutely concerned, right? I'm absolutely concerned about our operational readiness because of these things, right? There was just the USS Antietam caught on fire. No machinery was damaged on the ship. 13 sailors were injured putting out the fire. How did the fire start? What kind of fire doesn't damage any machinery?
Right.
Oh, you mean maybe one that was set by somebody who's pissed and wants to go back to port? Right?
But you
see those things and you think that now.
Well, the Bonhomme Richard, they arrested a guy for arson for that.
Right.
Hold on, bro. I haven't heard anything about this, which makes me very suspicious. Do you know anything about the guy they arrested?
It was the week I was doing R2P2 down there in Coronado.
I haven't read they arrested him. I read they have a suspect in some kind of pretrial confinement. Not pretrial confinement. Some kind of not really arrested and arraigned, but some kind of protective custody shit.
Right. Huh.
Yeah, and so you hear that, and what's the first thing that pops into your mind? I don't know, but in my mind, I'm thinking, well, it's not a white kid then, or because we'd know. They would have said something. And so it's got to be one of these things that's kind of embarrassing given the current political climate. And that's I could be completely full of shit.
Yeah, I don't think that.
The only reason I don't think that is because how dumb could they be to hide, to delay something like that, and then when they put it out, they look stupid. Yeah. I mean, if anything.
Yeah, I might be wrong, but it's the first thing I think.
I mean, I have to tell you, Timmy, I was thinking the same thing. Why isn't this guy being pilloried, you know, John McCutcheon, ass bag from fucking Utah, set the fire because he believes in Adolf Hitler or something, you know, or because he's pissed off at his chief petty officer. Right. You know, why isn't it coming out? You know, because usually that shit would come around. So then when it doesn't, I'm thinking it's because it's sensitive. But then I'm thinking they're just not too good at this shit anymore. You know, it's like
let me tell you. All you got to do is look at the Gallagher case and all the fallout from all the rest of this shit. You know, all you got to do is look at that, and you're like, yeah, I mean, they ought to be, they rightfully ought to be slow on the trigger. But I don't want to get sidetracked by that. I just, you know, this, I'll tell you what, it's just, when I saw that, you know, my first thought with the F-35 and the F-35 Bravo and the KC-130J was, is everybody alive? And yes. Right. And then it was, how the fuck does this happen again?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, and again, and then the third thought was, but for the grace of God, you know, there's the third KC-130 or C-130, you know, that has crashed in how many years? Three? Less than three? The one in Mississippi, right? And you're just like, what the fuck, man? Can we not maintain? Can we not fly this shit? Do we not know what we're doing? Are we that incompetent? What the fuck? And so my frustration. But because, again, like you guys, and I think Jeff has said it, and I mean, we were raised by Vietnam guys.
Right.
I mean, when they said we're going to LD at 08, you were standing there at 7:50, tapping your toe, waiting for somebody to say, you know, a 10, huh, right face. I think you didn't, I mean, and when you were supposed to inventory the armory, there was no fucking bullshit reason why you did not do it. I mean, so, I don't know. And if that edge has come off the pumpkin, and I'll throw this one out there. I'm maneuvering, again, I don't know why I was on Twitter, and I'm scrolling through looking for something, and I see something from Marine Corps Installations West. And it's got all these guys doing lawn maintenance and yard maintenance at SOI West, which I noticed a few weeks ago. And so I stop and I hit play. It's like, we're doing operation cleanup. Everybody, you know, we had 2,300 Marines here, and we have to take pride in our – well, let me tell you. I mean, when I drove there 2 months ago, I mean, the place looked like shit.
Yeah.
How does it look like shit and everybody fucking drive by it every day and nobody says shit? It's just somebody else's responsibility? And I just, that's never been the Marine Corps. It's, we make fun of the rake sand and the ropes, but I'll tell you what, go ahead and step on that rake sand and the gunny see your fucking ass or somebody who works for the gunny. They will kill you. That's our rake. Yeah, that's our rake sand, God damn it.
Doesn't have anything to do with SOI, but Roger Turner just took over the division. So, you know, Roger's a good boy.
That's cool.
Well, I mean, but again, how do you grow that attitude of we are accountable, this is our stuff, it's squared away, we're on time. But it starts with those things that you do every day, and one of them is field day, evidently, that we don't do a whole lot anymore. So I don't. But we're
you're
good.
Right, man.
We're good at the big stuff. We suck at the little stuff, though, right? Wrong. So anyway. All right. I feel better. Any final comments?
Fucking hospital foes are what made the Marine Corps, man.
There you go. Will, final comment? Tim, final comment?
No.
Yeah, I think we're good on that one, brother.
Okay, how would you reform our system of elections get better people elected? The more I watch the way we elect, the more concerning it is. And my solution is we vote over a four-day period, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, right? Polls are open. Okay, if you can't get to the poll, I'm sorry you can't vote. And I know that discriminates against some people, but that's too bad. When you come to the poll, you got to have an ID. And if you're at a new address, you got to have something with your name on it, but you got to have a picture ID, and that shows us who you are. And that's how we vote, period. All federal elections are federally funded. Once you win your party's primary, you get on the federal ballot. You get $3 million for the national election. That's all you get. There's four debates. That's how we fucking do it. So that's McNamara's solution. Will, do you have a solution of how we reform the election system? No. So my thing is get the crazy money out of these things. Because if Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden are the best this country has to offer in the last two election cycles, God fucking help us. So with that said, William?
I say on the mechanics of election day, I agree with you. It should be over a multi-day period. Vote in person. There should be a few exceptions to that. Military people who are ordered away from their home record should be able to vote absentee. Everyone else shows up in person, and you can deal with all the complaints you're going to get about photo IDs and et cetera, et cetera. There are very few people who actually can't get to a polling place for that reason. And that's not a lack of sympathy for people who are disabled, et cetera. People are able to go out and live their lives. If you want to participate in the democracy, so you show up Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. I agree with that 100%. On the other part of it, I'm a little wary. If you think about how candidates were first elected, by the people who wrote the Constitution, you know, George Washington would get elected because he'd open up a whiskey barrel next to the polling place. And that's a way that he would attract people to come vote for him. So they knew all the foibles of people voting, and they put protections in the Constitution so that we were not a direct democracy. They made it really hard to get things done because they knew the mob would act fast. They learned all this from studying the classics. And so I'm a little more cautious about fundamentally changing things in the election. I don't believe that money is what got Donald Trump elected in 2016. I don't think he spent the most money either in the primary or in the general election. He appealed to people who I think have felt they'd been left out. Now, the debate last night was not something that the founders would have recognized at all. And there's a fairly simple way to turn the debate into something worthwhile. Have a debate, right? You get 2 minutes, the other guy's microphone's cut off. He gets a minute to respond. Your microphone's cut off. Next question. He starts with 2 minutes. You get a minute to respond. That's pretty simple. The problem with the debates is that they're run by TV networks. And that's, you know, that's not very entertaining.
Right. They want that behavior. That's why. Because let me just tell you, if I don't want Jeff to talk, I just do this to him. And he's not saying shit, okay? Right? I mean that's how hard it is. So they want it, so it's the NASCAR element, right? We want to see the wreck.
Yeah. So and the other thing is people should be able to spend whatever money they want to spend. I think that one of the dangerous things that was not anticipated by the founders and that we're dealing with now is the control of social media. Social media not being held to the media side of the standard, you know, that there is something going on there that if legislators don't get involved, we're in a bad spot. Because they control the messages that are seen and not seen. But, you know, the country got along with, like, Chester Arthur and, you know, various and sundry other wackos through time. I don't know who's overly impressive, but I, you know, we'll see. Maybe this is going to breed a different level of candidate. I mean, I can think of people that in the next election cycle are going to be pretty prominent. But, you know.
Right.
And the other thing I would say is there's a lot of governments in history where smart people got together and figured out what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And there's tens of millions of dead people because of those smart guys that figured out what they wanted to do. Right. Make it simpler, make it easier. Right. Hitler, Lenin, Stalin, and Mao all come to my mind. So I'm careful.
Come on.
Absolutely.
Those were smart people who knew what they needed to do.
Are you lumping me with them?
No.
I take exception to sir. I take exception to that, sir.
But our that's messy way of doing things.
Nobody calls me Hitler, sir.
I mean, you know, Churchill had it right. It ain't a great way to do business.
Fuck.
It's just better than all the rest.
All right. You're done. Timmy, how about you?
The states control the voting, not the federal government. It's the state laws. Here in Texas, you've got to have an ID and a voter's registration card, and those addresses need to match, or you need to explain why they don't match. So to cast a vote in Texas, you've got to have your Texas driver's license. It's very simple. It's the other states that where this is a problem. But we're only how much? What percentage of eligible voters are even voting? What, 56, 49, something like that? I mean, it's every year we start hearing about this. We've got to make voting accessible, and we can't have IDs because the minorities don't have IDs. And every 4 years, the camera crews go down into minority neighborhoods and ask anybody if they have an ID. And they go, of course we got IDs. What the hell you mean? Why wouldn't we have an ID? The whole argument is ridiculous, and it's recycled to every 4 years. I personally don't think you can take the money out because we've got a First Amendment. And people want to be able to throw their money to support their candidate because a lot of the nastiness that you hear doesn't come from the candidate necessarily. It comes from other political action committees. I'm all for trying to reduce those things, and I'm all for trying to have a set limit that a presidential candidate can spend. I'm for all that stuff. I'm for a flat tax of 18% too. All these are fantastic ideas. That will never happen because the vested interests, the last thing that people controlling this country want, a Democrat or Republican, is a third party that's viable. That they're never going to let that happen. Ross Perot, they put an end to that kind of shenanigans in the 90s. So I have very little hope that our elections will be anything other than third world affairs. And I get pissed about it. Because like I said, I'm over in Afghanistan watching Jeff put his ass out there to try to get Afghans the right to vote. And when I see that our elections are being tampered with so blatantly, with these valid harvesting initiatives and whatnot, I don't like it. But what are you going to do? Because it doesn't seem like anything is going to change anytime soon.
All right. No, and I sent everybody the story about Project Veritas and with the disclaimer. You know, James O'Keefe comes with mixed baggage. He's taken to task by the methods that he uses, some of the deception that people say he uses, the editing people accuse him of doing. But I will tell you this: if you watch the latest thing he's done, and he said there's a part two to it that hasn't come yet. I mean, it's stunning. Now I know. I mean, voting harvesting, vote harvesting. That term didn't get invented 2 weeks ago. That's been going on for a long time.
Oh yeah.
Right. And so, and it's interesting. You see all these different organizations that undertake studies of our voting system, and they all come back and say the same thing: the more liberal you make mail-in balloting, right, the more you will open up the doors for election abuse. And and then you see and you hear what allegedly is going on in Minneapolis, and it's absolutely, absolutely stunning. And so, so even if you're an O'Keefe hater, if you watch the video, I mean, I don't know what you say. And with that said, Jeff, you, I'll give it to you.
Okay. Well, first of all, I agree with you 100% on the mechanics of the voting.
Thank you.
I think that's a good way of doing it.
Yeah. Take that, Will.
And I agree with you.
Will agree with that too. I agree with Will about the other stuff because I think that it's not so much the danger isn't so much how much money people can give.
You're muted.
It's what the power is of the people you elect. What's their parameters? The people you elect. You know, you got two of the three branches we vote for, and then there's one, the judicial, we don't, and we just need to try and make sure that it doesn't get perverted. But the when you start piling more regulations on things, really it gives more people opportunity to pervert those very regulations, in my opinion. You know, it's like, okay, we have these rules now. I think a lot of these stupid rules that we had in regards to laws and stuff like that led to things like Iran-Contra. You know, I mean, without getting too far afield, you know. But I think that less laws, the better. You know, beyond our Constitution. And I think that, and I agree with both what Timmy and Will said regarding the financial, you know, stuff that could be given to him. As far as O'Keefe goes, I admire the guy because his first forays he did into this stuff were mainly centered around Planned Parenthood,
right,
and some of the appalling things that were happening there. And they got a lot of money. They went after him, some real legal sharks, and they exposed weaknesses possibly in his methods of, you know, modus of operandi. But the guy's, my sense about this guy is he's essentially an honest guy. And I agree with Mac about this last thing that came out regarding the voter stuff. It's a big, you know, vulnerable thing that's out there that is integral to our government. And it's being exploited by people who are unscrupulous, I think. And in this case, you know, we're kind of right wing here on this podcast.
Kind of.
I think in this case,
kind of,
it militates to the left wing people. They're getting what they want, and we're not really. You know.
Yeah, let me give you a couple more stipulations in the kingdom of McNamara. Okay. You have to test into the criminal justice system. Okay, so if we identify you by your behavior as a predator. You know what we do with predators? Because a human being,
we make them majors.
No. A human being has a reflective self-conscious, right? So a human being can think about their actions and act with compassion and do the right thing. So if you behave like a predator, you now test into the animal criminal justice system. And what do we do with predators in the animal kingdom? We put them down, right?
Yep.
You're a predator. We don't try to rehabilitate an animal. So if you show me that you're a predator, and this happened, this – so I'm doing my radio show back in the day, and so we had a girl in Grand Forks, went to the University of North Dakota, you know, had a guy, a four-time, right, violent predator, right, out of prison after his fourth conviction, doesn't do any offender treatment, none of that shit. Follows her to her car, right? Shoves her into her car, duct tapes her mouth, rapes her, murders her, stuffs her body under the ice of the Red River.
Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. And so it turns out this is the fifth offense. His right to be free trumped her right to live her life. Why? Why? Fucking why? Fucking why? And so months later, the guy is getting ready to go on trial. And so there was a case in New York, I want to say on Long Island, where two guys busted into this house of a doctor, right? And they murdered, I want to say, his wife and one of the daughters after they raped the daughters. And then they set the place on fire. He survives, and one of the other, one of the daughters survives. And so I said, I'm reading this. I said, oh, let me guess. These guys didn't come from choir practice and do this. These guys are 3-, 4-, 5-time violent fucking criminals, and they were out. So in the kingdom of McNamara, which I'm the king of, right, I go to my police chief, and we go to the house, and I say, hey, I'm going to hang out here. I'm going to be sitting on my tailgate, eating my lunch. When you figure out who the fuck did this, come and get me. And I've got a good police chief, right? Will's the police chief. And he's like, got it, chief. I said, thanks, Will. I like it when you call me chief. He goes, it's appropriate. So anyway, and so Will does his thing. And he comes to me 4 hours later, and he brings these two dudes to me, and he says, their fingerprints are on the weapon. There, some of the possessions of this family are in there, and they have soot on their clothes. These guys are the two guys. Are you sure? Yes. So I'm eating a ham sandwich. I take my .45. I said, could you bring them back behind their house? Because I believe in discretion, right? And as I'm eating my fucking ham sandwich, I shoot them both in the fucking head. Right? And then because I'm a good king, right, I help put him in the bags and be done with him. Right? That got a trial move. That got a trial moved out of this. Like, I was accused of inciting violence and insurrection. But it's like, why does their right to be violent and then serve their time and come out and live amongst us and pray amongst us again trump our right to be free and live our lives? It's not right.
No,
that's why you need to.
No, that's the fallacy between
it's
the.
It's all in there.
It's better to let 100 innocent men. Or it's better to let one innocent man go to jail than wait a minute. How does it go? To let like
one guilty man free
than send right. one innocent man to jail. But the truth is, those 100 guilty men will commit 100 more crimes before they get caught again. You've basically sentenced 1,000 more people to having their lives ruined by predators. Yes, I agree.
It's crazy, though. You read this shit of the criminal justice system, and again, the people that are, you know, are dealing drugs and all that shit, you know, whatever you want to do with them. You want to put them in therapy, whatever the fuck. You know, help them. Help them get off that shit, okay? You know, take them to a PT the shit out of them. You know, talk to them. Do whatever you need. They don't need to be incarcerated in federal prisons. The predators, you know... Life sentence, go the fuck away. Your right to be free doesn't trump my right to be alive.
Yeah.
Now, Will, you made a comment that it's all in the Constitution. Could you expand on that?
No. Well, there's two things. One, read Starship Troopers. Oh. It's all in there.
Oh, you're right.
That's true.
Right, because the right to vote is predicated on?
Service.
How many push-ups do you do?
It's predicated on service. Predicated on service. You earn the right to vote in that republic. As it should be.
Yeah.
Okay. The favorite part of the program coming up now is what are you reading? Will, what are you reading?
I'm still reading that book on Edison. So
what?
I'm getting to the beginning, which means I'm near the end because he wrote it in reverse order. And it's still fascinating. Just a fascinating life.
Are you still have you come to a conclusion whether you like the narrative going backwards? Or
no, I've come to a conclusion. He's really going to have to convince me in the last couple of chapters that it's a good idea. I don't know how he's going to do it, but it's a terrible idea. It's an absolutely terrible way to read a book or to write a book. Unless there's some huge revelation that makes it all comes together in the last chapter, I just don't know how he can do it. I think he lost his mind when he tried to write Reagan's biography.
Well, hold on. We have to. I'm curious. Now, when do you think you'll finish this book?
Next day or two.
Okay. All right. So by next week, we'll get an answer to all this. Whether,
oh, for sure.
Whether he wowed you at the end. Because now I'm anticipating it.
All right. That's a great teaser for next week's show.
Another reason to listen in case you needed one. In case, I mean, the pearls of wisdom, right? Testing into the criminal justice system. If you act like a predator, we treat you like a predator. I mean, how brilliant is that?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? I think it's a little bit brilliant. There's two criminal justice systems, one with compassion, one without. You decide which one you go into by virtue of, did you just make a mistake and you feel remorse and this was an accident of some sort? Or did you hunt down this fucking person and do them malicious predatory damage?
What if the guy gave you a set of snow tires, though?
What?
Listen, never forget, the people aren't here for the host. They're here for the guests.
You think?
Yes.
You think, there you go. Spoken like an overconfident guest. Tim?
I want to make an observation real quick, Mac. And that is, you know, we went to Afghanistan hopefully to teach the Afghans about freedom and democracy and stuff like that. But there were some things they had in their culture that were non-negotiable. Being able to hunt down and kill somebody who murdered a member of your family was an absolute right to the Afghans. They would not hear of reporting this to the police. Or if they caught one of their daughters talking to a boy that wasn't authorized, they reserved the right to kill her. Not negotiable. They were never going to change that. And you've even talked about having to turn over girls back to their families in that situation.
No, that we wouldn't do that. And the shit that it cost. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it would have caused a whole bunch of shit.
It did.
But now. Our election's sort of looking like their election. We're talking about some Pashtun justice here for rapists and whatnot. I kind of dig it. I just curious to me. That's all. I just thought I had to make that analogy.
Very good, Tim.
Thank you. Now I'm cheating because I went to a book on tape because I was on the road for a couple of days, and I got S.C. Gwynne's Hymns of the Republic: The Story of the Final Year of the American Civil War. Now, S.C. Gwynne, the last time I mentioned him was he's the Comanche guy. He did an excellent history of the Comanches. But if you think the name calling, the invective, the machinations of our election this year are bad, you should go back and read about 1864 and what Lincoln was going through. I mean, outright the it's the Democrats from the 60s. Not now. I don't want to sound like a partisan or anything, but they were colluding with Agency Canada using Confederate money to try to oust Lincoln and cause. This is funny now. They had a plan. They threw spies up in Canada. They were going to come down and start civil unrest in all the major cities so that the peace now portion of the American public, which was most of them, would shit can Lincoln and they would be done with the war. How ironic is that? The carnage in the cities. But as far as what Trump and Biden were talking to each other, that's tame compared to the surrogates, not Lincoln, obviously, the surrogates that were feuding on both sides of that presidential election. But
let me just tell you, here's one other one, too. And I said this, you know, am I losing my mind? Has it always been like this? My constant, you know, inner voice telling me that, you know, it's always been like this. I'm just watching it more often. But all you have to do is watch the movie Lincoln, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
And the way they pass the amendment, it's disgusting. Right. Our democracy in action. You know, I hear Will thinking Churchill thoughts. It is the worst form of government. Save all others. Yeah, I can hear Will now thinking. I'm channeling my inner Will.
Don't you feel better?
No, I feel inadequate.
Oh, man. Anyway, a good book from Mr. Gwynne. That guy's a great writer.
Spell the name, would you?
S-C-G-W-Y-N-N-E. So that's Gwynne, right?
G-W-Y-N-N-E. Gwynn. All right.
Gwynn, and that guy is another young guy, just like Ian Toll and Hornfisher. All these damn 30-year-old guys are putting out some great history.
What do you call Hornfisher? What do you call him?
Hornfisher. I can't remember his name until Timmy says it to me. It's Hornswagger. Yeah. That's my book. I got into the part past where now they're fighting. It's Norman Scott, Admiral Norman Scott, fighting in Guadalcanal, and he's very aggressive, and he's also smart. And of course, tragedy befalls the guy, but I haven't got to that part yet. But it is great because
Did you just say tragedy befalls the guy? Were you writing that or thinking that?
No, it happens later.
Oh, so you articulated as you would write it? Tragedy befalls the guy?
No, I didn't. I would never write it. I would just say it.
Tragedy befalls him? You meant to say, and the fucking guy gets whacked? But you said...
I don't think he gets whacked. And
tragedy befalls him. Oh,
but
really?
I have to say, Lori said the same thing that Tim was saying about, about said the same thing. I couldn't believe it.
So wait, what do you mean? Says what the same thing?
The fighting and name calling thing. You know he was saying.
From the old days, right?
Yeah. So
if you watch the movie Lincoln, they would assure you of that. They would assure you of that. So so we'll just get used.
This book though is really it's the Guadalcanal battle is so great because these guys are working their tactics, and they're like. Half of them are thinking we got to be more aggressive, and the other half are saying, "Are you shitting us? Every time we do that, we get our ass whipped." And yet you had Admiral Nimitz, who even though he never was in combat as a surface guy, he's like saying, "Look, you got to push it. You got to push it." And here's the interesting thing that comes out in this part of the book: when Nimitz was a young officer, he was the CO of a destroyer, and he ran aground off the Philippines. Like a 1908 or something. Ran aground.
What?
And he's like...
Isn't that against the rules?
He got court-martialed. And he's like, I thought that a destroyer captain's job, lieutenant commander's job, was to be audacious. And that's what I did. I mean, the boat was... It was just because he ran aground. In those days, in the Navy, you ran aground, you were fucking getting court-martialed. And even though nobody got hurt, there's not even any damage. There's a sandbar he ran aground on. And, but he said that. And so a lot of these guys during this time in Guadalcanal are saying, hey, look, these destroyer captains.
Well, wait a minute. You only run aground, Will and Tim, you guys are both Navy men. You only run aground if they have to come get you, right? If you get yourself off the sandbar, then you never read aground. You just got hung up.
He needed somebody to come get him.
So how does he stay in the Navy and get promoted?
Because I guess he was so good otherwise. They gave him a shot. They gave him a chance.
Well, and the penalty Ernest King for a court-martial for an officer that wasn't like,
go ahead,
a character offense was loss of places on the lineal list.
Right.
So he lost, years and years of pay and promotion because they backed him up in the lineal list.
That'll teach you, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Will.
You read about the number of court martials of senior Marine officers in that period, 1890 to World War I. They were all court martialed at one point.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Vandegrift, court martial.
So I should feel good about myself? It's a sign of an exemplary leader? Is that what you're telling me? That I was following in the
stuff,
I was a court-martialed, mind you. Minor form of discipline by the...
Wasn't it you, Mac, or might have been Freddie?
Hey, when I easy, got my easy now.
Letter reprimand for the Loblolly Pine massacre at R7, I think it was you. You said, Don't look so down. You're not shitting if you don't have one of those in your jacket. Something like that. Oh,
non-punitive letter of caution, right? What's the whole thing? What are they going to do? Roll it up and stab you in the eye with it? It means nothing.
Right.
Yeah,
right?
You guys, that's what you guys are telling me because I was kind of down that I got punished.
Well, I mean, Greenpeace still hates you, I think, for that. But,
Yeah, that was.
I have to tell you, though, that the thing about that with these guys is – You know, Nimitz later was saying, look, we can't be making these destroyer captains afraid to ground their ships on the sand in the tides, because like the Manessen, this one ship, saved Chesty Puller's guys up there in Point Cruz and Guadalcanal. They grounded themselves. They put out a lot of rounds, you know, to allow him to get off the shitty situation he was in.
Well, I think, doesn't it matter why you grounded yourself? If you say, they right. say, sir, you grounded your ship. And you yeah. say, yes, Commodore, I did, because I was as close as I could get to the beach, and I was trying to help the Coconut Grove boys.
But oh. it's a promotion thing when you think right. about it for people who are doing the admin, because they're like, aha, that's a guy who can write off. You don't have to worry about promoting him. He doesn't have to get up in front of the board and show pictures of his fat ass and his just whites, and you know what I mean?
And they didn't even care about that. Look at
yeah,
look
you're
at
right.
you look at Howland Smith, Howland Matt Smith. Did he that guy ever PT in his life?
Didn't look that way.
Yeah, I mean, where did we become PT crazy? You know, look at all of them.
If there's an outside head, you have to run from the head to last call. Yeah. That's about it. Which I've done, but you know,
all right,
haven't we all?
All right, Tim's got the final comment, and then we'll call it an evening.
Yeah, I was just going to say about Nimitz, you know, because Jeff is reading the Hornfisher stuff. If you go right back and read Ian W. Toll, covering the same ground but from different perspectives, but Nimitz used to, in the middle of a day, he would suddenly get up and go walk for like 3 hours. I mean, like walk, like haul ass. And
yeah.
His chief of staff was just it was something that he just insisted on doing. He was a very peculiar guy, but he also was reportedly a handsome man. So he might have got a break for that too. You never know with those Navy guys.
Spruance was on them walking motherfuckers too, man. Spruance too. I heard that.
Yeah.
Mm. You know All what right. else Nimitz used to do on his break?
Uh oh. No.
What? He would take his .45 out and go shoot. Imagine
that's true.
Maybe
that's right.
Doing
that's
that today.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did Imagine it for concentration, that. To stress relief. His doctor told him to do that. And then he got all competitive with everybody with the .45.
All right.
On that's a different Navy.
And a different Navy. Yeah. As Will said, imagine that. Find the fighting admirals, I think was your quote last week. Yes, Will?
Yeah. Where would we find one?
Right, Admiral Nimitz. There you go. All right, boys. First of
now
all,
they're doing yoga.
Exactly. Cause they...
Hot yoga. Whoa. That's better.
Hey, look, ridiculing other people doesn't make you a better person. Okay,
but it is fun.
It makes you feel better, though, right?
It does, without a doubt. And it is fun. It is fun. All right. All right. Thank you. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.